Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And welcome to Recall the Midwife. Today we are talking about Series 6, Episode 4. I'm Alex.
I'm Becky.
I'm Jen. A quick reminder that this week's episode deals with miscarriage, family abandonment, and adoption. So if those are topics you would prefer to skip this time, we understand and hope you join us for the next one.
In this week's episode, we meet Marnie Wallace, who is expecting her third child. Marnie's husband has left her and she's struggling financially. In desperation, she comes to an arrangement with her cousin, Dot, who will take the baby after it's born. Dot and her husband, Eugene, have been unable to have children and Eugene refuses to consider adoption. Marnie gives birth to a boy. Dot names him Andrew after Prince Andrew. But Marnie soon comes to regret her decision and Tom and Sister Winifred accompany her to Dot's house to ask for him back, leaving Dot heartbroken. Meanwhile, at Nanata's house, Sister Julianne is given the go-ahead to recruit a new midwife. Nurse Crane takes the cubs under her wing after they've gone to hell in a handcart following Patsy's departure. Mm-hmm. Trixie is back teaching Keep Fit and Sheila remains in hospital. She befriends Gloria Venables, who is 6 months pregnant and has suffered a number of losses. Sadly, she suffers another loss. After an initial setback, Sheila eventually hears her baby's heartbeat for the first time. And finally, after struggling to find a suitable candidate, Sister Julianne has the brilliant idea and visits the Hand and Shears to recruit Valerie Dyer.
I think it's the black sail, though.
It is the black sail.
Oh,
we're keeping it in because it referenced another pub. I liked it.
Everybody goes to the Hand and Shears.
Yeah. Oh, it's a very popular pub in Poplar.
To be fair, I would. I love the name of it. The summer of 1962. What a brutal, brutal episode this one was. My goodness.
Oh, yeah. This was a tough one. It was sad.
Do you know, I wrote a note that I thought it was a lot lighter.
Really?
Do you know what I think it was? I think it's because Sister Ursula's gone.
Well, yeah, but then it was, I meant more about emotionally with the miscarriage.
Yeah, it was a heavy adoption.
The actual main storyline, they had really good lighter bits because obviously Sister Ursula, there was no levity when the Sister Ursula episodes were on because when it went back to Nanata's house, there was no like comedy lovely scenes. It was just her ruling with an iron rod. It was horrible.
Yeah.
Whereas now you've actually got that lovely festival and everything they were doing, the opening of the recreation area. It was lovely. So that was great. You're right.
Also, but I did have to lull when Nurse Crane and Sister Julian were in Sister Julian's office and Sister Monica Joan brought in a tea tray and it was like a cake with like coffee flavor in it, and she's like, I had my portion early, otherwise it will keep me up too long. I was like, and there's like a quarter of the cake missing and everything, and they're like, okay.
Do you know, I couldn't see Fred in his overalls without thinking of you now, Jen.
Oh, I love the overalls. Oh my god, but as soon as I saw that again, I was like, get me a pair of those overalls.
You know what, Jen, so at work we got this magazine of like workwear, because we've got, it's a long story, there's a people who have different things at my job. And there was literally that boiler suit, and I nearly got you one. But it was ridiculously expensive. I was going to send it over with you, call the midwife book. And
yeah.
I thought, maybe I'll just get it on the work. But then I thought, no, that's call fraud. I can't believe you might miss your employment for me,
but
that would
yeah.
be your downfall.
Number one, they'll never listen to this. But number two, I genuinely never would do that.
No, of course you wouldn't. The thing is, what I really want to do is like go thrifting, because like all the cool kids now do thrifting, and I want to like go find like a cool place, and like I actually really want men's ones, because I just want them like really roomy and like droopy and like soft and saggy and everything, and then I'm gonna style it exactly like Fred. I'm gonna wear like a shirt or a button down or something, and like I cannot wait to like literally be like a Fred impersonator style icon there. No, I draw a line at that, but you know, just from the neck down, I'm gonna look a lot like Fred. Oh man, I hope the overalls come back again. I want to see them every week.
Well, Devo wear them anyway. That's by the bye. Which one are we doing first, ladies?
Yeah, where
let's
we start
discuss
from back?
Marnie.
Ugh. I gotta be honest, Marnie really, I'm just gonna say it. I just didn't like her.
Well, no, hang on. I felt really, she was heavy, heavy pregnant. She already had Kevin and Mandy. Her husband had left her. She was angry. I feel like she was very bitter and angry because she'd been left in this position by her husband.
Yeah.
Who hadn't given permission for her to have a bank account either.
Oh,
like,
that made me angry.
It made me really angry. So I feel like
she's a victim of circumstance. True. For that, that's true. But
yeah. Like, really a victim, though, heavily pregnant, terrified about what's going to happen, literally saying you've got to be out in 2 weeks with no other option, mm-hmm. and then being told, oh, there's people you can ask for help. Well, no one's helped and no one's offered. She's just been left like this, destitute.
Wait. Let's just pause for 1 second, okay? And I'll just say, like, this is probably my... Okay, I fully own that, like, my headspace watching this episode is very particular to like where I am in life right now and like what I deal with at work and like where I feel personally about certain things and stuff like that. But Marnie got left by her husband like months ago, okay, because she had time to take out a loan, not pay it off, and then have it all go into default and go to court.
See, I thought she'd paid the loan. I thought she'd taken it out when she was with him, thinking that they would be able to pay it off.
She took it out right after he left, not realizing that he was never going to come back. But then when she did realize he was never going to come back, then she was like, oh, I just never made payments and never talked to anybody about what was going on. And I never did anything else. And then Tom, when he finds out about it and he starts getting into it, she says something about, oh, my national assistance like won't cover this. Like, it's not enough and everything like that. And it's like, okay, so you're getting something already. Like, you know, and the fact of the matter is, like, Trixie said it to her, Tom said it to her, like other people said it to her, like, and she even has a sister-in-law that said to her, like, tell me what you need, I'll give you whatever you need. Like,
I'm here for you. We love shame. You. There shouldn't be shame, and that then there certainly was, but she's feeling ashamed about her husband leaving.
I agree about pride and shame, but I'm like, you've got two mouths to feed and one on the way. Like, you have to reframe the narrative for yourself. Just
yeah,
and,
you can't
and
be like,
she's hormonal. It's awful. I was the most angriest, horrible cow when I was pregnant.
No, she's just dug herself into a massive hole and not sought any sort of help until she's like in dire circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't agree.
She had many opportunities to have people show up for her, help her, bail her out, make it easier, you know, like lift
the
burden.
But also she had to actually say that he wasn't coming back. That made it real. I think there was a bit of that about it as well.
No, I think she knew he wasn't coming back.
No, I think Alex is saying then she would have had to like actually feel bad about him being abandoned. But like,
I knew that. I think she'd faced up to it.
Oh, okay, maybe. But again, it's like you have two children relying on you. Like, I don't know. Like, the pride felt like a vanity. I'm just gonna say it. It felt like a real vanity piece there. I was like, if you can't deal with it, then like, okay. But like, you're gonna put your children at risk of starvation and homelessness because you don't want to admit that you need help. And like, that's. I don't know, man. That was like too big of a pill to swallow for me.
I am brimming with compassion for her here. You two aren't.
I have zero compassion for her. Also, Doc came around. So I just need to correct you, Jen, because I know we'll have people messaging.
Okay.
Doc is her cousin.
Cousin. Okay, not sister-in-law. Yeah. Cousin. Okay, cousin.
So Doc comes around because it's Kevin's
birthday.
Hang on.
First off, Trixie went around. This is how we met, Marnie. And I was a bit like, read the room, Trixie. She was like, obviously she wanted to go to court or whatever. She was trying to go to court and Trixie was there. But that's what I mean. I feel like she was trying to keep up appearances more. Anyway, sorry, carry on.
Well, anyway, Doc comes round. Yeah, because Trixie comes round. Marnie's desperate to get out because she's got a court appearance.
Hey, because of all of her debt, basically.
So they basically put a repayment plan in. And also they just put a repayment plan in place for her, which is what she had in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she's dodging her landlord for like months.
She can't work because they don't let pregnant people work.
No,
I've got a simple. What she bought on HP?
The pram, I think, was it? No, because it was old.
It was old. The other kids' pram that she saved when she knew she was going to have another baby.
I don't know what she bought then. Anyway, carry on. Sorry.
Mm. It's Kevin's birthday, so Doc comes around with a present for Kevin. Mm-hmm. Presents Kevin with the present, and at that point, Marnie says, "We're not celebrating Kevin's birthday, but you know I can't afford." Now, I do have sympathy for her here, but with Dot having presented the present to Kevin,
yeah,
I think they'd let him have it.
It's a bit much to take it off him.
I feel like at this point as well, they were trying to like present Dot as a bit arrogant, as a bit like holding over her a bit, like, oh, I've got money and you haven't. You know, I've told you before if you need anything. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I just think I didn't think Dot was being like that. Like Dot,
no,
like,
I'm team Dot all the way.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not against Dot, but I feel like that's what I'm saying. I feel like at this point the writers were trying to present her as a bit, oh, look at my door, look at my doorbell. I've got everything. Do you know what I mean? Like a bit.
Yeah, yeah. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Pride goeth before the fall, Marnie.
And I don't think that's fair because Eugene actually says, so I'm kind of skipping ahead now because I don't know if we're getting out of order. But when they come to the arrangement, Eugene sits down because he basically like pays her rent arrears basically to get her.
Well, hang on, we haven't even said that they were going to take the baby.
No, but I know, but I want to make the point about Eugene.
Oh, go on.
And Eugene is Dot's husband.
Yeah, and Eugene actually says about the landlord, he says, I recognize this landlord. He terrorized me and Dot when we were in our first place. So yeah, Dot's in her lovely semi-detached property with I love a bit of Pebble Dash. That house is lush.
I did think of you. She's one of the only people in the country who loves a bit of Pebble Dash.
I do love Pebble Dash. But although they're portraying Dot as being very, they are trying to make her out as if she's a bit stuck up, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I just don't think that's fair because Eugene making that point about how he recognised the landlord's name, like that's where they came from the exact same position. But sadly, Dot and Marnie's paths have just been different because Marnie's husband's abandoned her.
Yeah.
So
basically, she's heavy pregnant, like 9 months pregnant, and Dot and Eugene offer to take the baby because Eugene doesn't want to adopt a baby from, so they've obviously been trying for years, can't have a baby, and Eugene doesn't want to adopt a baby just from a family they don't know. He's like,
that's not related to them. He's like, I want it to be family. Yeah.
Yes. So this is like the perfect solution to Dot and Eugene, and also it seems like the perfect solution to Marnie because obviously she's not got any money. She can't even feed the two mouths she's got to feed as well. So she decides that she will go through with it, but it is very pain. It's pained, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She doesn't want to, but she's being forced. She's been forced into that situation.
Yeah, and it's not Dot and Eugene who are forcing her. It's just the situation that's going on. And Tom talks about adoption to her.
Herself, but okay.
But Tom talks, well, she didn't get herself pregnant. So Tom talks about adoption, and then it comes out that he was adopted when he was a baby. And it brings up quite a lot of feelings for him as well, because obviously when he actually witnesses the adoption and things, it brings it from a whole, because he's only ever seen adoption as a good thing, because obviously he's got amazing adopted parents and it gave him a good life. And now he's seen it from the other side with another woman giving away a baby she doesn't want to give away. And he saw the heartbreak there. So I thought that was quite nice that they showed that. It was quite nuanced.
Yeah, that was a nice way to give the story extra depth. Yeah, Defo.
So when I was watching this episode, my niece came in. Just at the point where she was handing the baby over. And she was like, why is she upset? And I was like, well, because she's got to give her baby up. And she's like, why is she giving it away? And she's like, I was like, she can't afford to keep it. And she's like, well, why did she have it? And I said, well, she got pregnant, so she couldn't do anything.
And it's 1962, so there's really not a lot of choice on that one.
And she just went, ooh.
Yes.
Also, can we just have a nod to the Andrew after Prince Andrew? That episode did not age well.
Some of those choices are now being looked at in retrospect, like, oh.
Do you know what? My heart broke for Dot, though, when she described herself as barren.
I know. I know.
Because also it might be Eugene's problem.
Well, it's hard to say, honestly, at this point.
She's the one who's going to get the blame for it. And he's the one who's like, oh, no, I won't even consider adoption.
Eugene, though, with his look at me with my gold nibbed pen. talking about adoption. So they were talking about it around Renata's house, basically saying that, you know, we need to all be as very aware of this whole situation and make sure we're as caring and compassionate as we can be. And Tom was there talking about it. And because obviously both Barbara and Trixie obviously knew from, obviously they were both in relationships with him. And Phyllis was so kind talking about the adoption with Tom. And I just, it was just a lovely scene. Mm. And then Marnie goes into labour and she's sick, just like with Kevin. And poor Marnie in that birth. That birth was brutal. And she just kept getting shouted at. Punch! Scream now, Marnie! Stop now! Get the doctor, Marnie! Sit there! Like, it was just completely shouted at the whole time.
I wonder when she was like, don't make any noise.
Yeah. Don't waste any energy. Push now! Scream at her, yeah.
Wait a minute. Remind me, who was helping her give birth, though?
It was Sister Winifred and Trixie, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Why were they yelling at her so much?
And then Dr. Turner came because the baby wouldn't come. And then Dr. Turner had to come when it was forceps. Yeah.
They had to yank the baby out.
Forceps just looks brutal, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah. It does.
It looks like you're going to actually pull the baby's head off.
Yeah. You're not, but yeah.
I know. Oy, oy, oy.
But also what else was really awkward was Dr. Turner obviously hadn't been informed of this situation. So when she had the baby, tried to give it to Marnie. And Marnie was like, no, I don't. Because I think if I was giving up the baby, I wouldn't be able to look. I don't know. I don't know. I don't think I could.
No, I don't think I could either. But this annoyed me. A lot of people annoyed me in this episode. Obviously, Dr. Turner had walked into it. He wasn't aware of the fact that the arrangement that had been made. But it's not all that unusual for other people. Like, you would have, like, grandmothers raising their, you know, like, their daughter's children. And I just think the look on his face, I was like, you've bloody adopted Angela. Like, this isn't new to you.
Also, clearly, like, you like have the fruits of that venture, you know what I mean? Like, you know how happy it is for an adoption to take place in many circumstances. So
now, something else that annoyed me about Marnie, you'll like this because it's slagging Marnie off because you two seem to hate it, but she insisted on the baby being christened, right, but wouldn't hold it to that point. And I feel like she knows how Dot feels about it, and it was going to be Dot's baby. I thought that was bloody cheeky of her, if I'm honest.
To be fair, I thought Dot was good about that.
I thought Dot was good about it, considering it's her bloody baby.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I can understand her wanting him to be christened, and I think she had every right to kind of say, I would like him to be christened, but I think she should have involved Dot.
Yeah, same.
And I know Dot does say, like, oh, well, it doesn't mean anything to me, but I do think she should have at least been present.
Yeah, same. That's what I mean. I just think it's definitely a bit of a liberty.
Definitely. Also, you know what other line, like, really, really annoyed me with Marnie was when they'd given the baby to Dot, Dot was taking care of it, they bought, you know, the kid everything, single thing that he could need, and then she's like, oh no, like, you know, and then what's the Eugene goes to Tom and is like, listen, like, I think we need like a formal adoption here because, like, you know, we're really getting invested in this kid, and, you know, we just want to make sure it's like, it's a protection for everyone, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you just want to make sure everything's above board. And so then Tom goes to Marnie and is like, well, you know, this is what they're asking for, like, it would mean that it's a permanent decision and you can't change your mind. And then she's like, oh, I can't, oh, huh, wait a minute, hold on. And then she's like, yeah, no, actually I do want the baby back. And that, like, I definitely get that, you know, giving up your child is a really complicated thing. And I, you know, I don't know how I would feel if I was in that situation of, like, wanting to hold it or not or whatever. But, like, I totally get, like, her side in terms of, like, the pain of losing that. But to me, there seems like something really tragic about getting a baby and then having it taken away. Like, yeah. I just, when she walked in with Tom and Winifred behind her and was like, I want the baby back. And Dot was like, so you could tell she was absolutely shattered, like absolutely devastated by it.
I felt so bad for her.
Oh my God. And Marnie walks in and she just is kind of like, yeah, sorry, but I do want my kid. And anyways, and then Dot says something about, like, oh, you know, like, I, like, she makes a comment, like, something like,
blood's flowing out of her like water.
Yeah, exactly. And she's like, well, it's flowing out of me like milk. And I was like, no, 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 Marnie. No, 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 no. You do not get to claim anything at this point. You have done nothing for that baby other than give it over to this woman who is taking care of it. Like,
the other thing that annoyed me about this scene as well was when Marnie was stood there and she had Sister Winifred and Tom behind her. And it was like they were kind of stood with her like that was the right thing to do. Those three were in the right.
Three against one there.
Yeah. And it was like, I've written here, she took their money and resources and then took the baby back. Like, it's, she's actually done everything wrong here.
Yes.
And
then she's rewarded kind of for like, all of her bad behavior. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But then it's like a united front for her. And I get, like, to be fair, Dot and Eugene were amazing about it. Eugene especially was amazing about it. But it was very
confrontational towards Dot, I think.
Yeah.
No one had an ounce of compassion for Dot.
No.
No. And it was all like, oh, this poor woman, this poor mother. Like, look at the bad situation she's in. Look at the painful choice she's been confronted with and everything else. And it's like, well, where's the accountability? That's what drove me. And I'll just say, like, I know for listeners out here, I feel like I'm taking a very, very hard stance, and like, I appreciate that I sound completely discompassionate.
She isn't
like I 100% have a heart for like how these situations are so hard, so complicated, so nuanced, like have to be done with so much thoughtfulness and care for the feelings of both sides and for the baby in the middle, or the child in the middle that is, you know, leaving one home situation and going to a different one, and like all the different ways that can work. I get it, and I am very sympathetic to it, and I genuinely, you know, do think that there are, you know, I support people's choices, all of that, you know, like I'm here for that. I just want to be very clear about the fact that in this specific situation with this specific mother with this specific storyline, I just did have a lot of like harsh feelings towards Marnie as a biological mother. And I think what I found really frustrating about Marnie is that, yes, she had a husband who left. Yes, she had a husband who wouldn't let her have a bank account. Yes, she was in a time where women were not allowed to be, you know, working while they were pregnant. Like, yes, there were a lot of things against her. But at the same time, her inability to face the situation that she was in, be accountable, be proactive, and deal with it before all of these horrible things happened. It's like she created the suffering that ended up coming to pass, including the suffering she put on family who was trying to be loving, not only to her, but to her children and to her unborn child. And
I will say, can I just say,
no consequences and got nothing, everything worked out for her in the end. Yeah, she didn't have a husband, and I get, you know, I get it. But I'm just saying, like, she had all of her kids, she had all of her kids' stuff paid for, she got all the bank stuff arrears, and then she's got all the support and everything else. And it's like, okay, well, isn't that nice? You know what I mean?
But I will say to her, even if, like, she hadn't have done that with the kids and stuff, and even if she hadn't got into all that debt, it wouldn't have been like this luxurious, lovely lifestyle, because her husband had left her absolutely high and dry. It still would have been a struggle.
No, I get that. But again, that is terrible. And like, I am sympathetic to it. But like, there are a lot of single moms in Poplar. And frankly, there are a lot of moms in Poplar who, even if the husband is there, he's more work than if he wasn't there, honestly. Like, I just, like,
ain't that the truth?
I mean, even today, I'll just say too, like, I'm in a very, like, very specific headspace with like a lot of like PMS hormones like raging through me. So like, everything's hitting like on a real fever pitch at the moment. But I'm just, I don't know, man. I just could not. What sympathy I had for Marnie, which was genuine, was greatly outweighed by my frustration and irritation with her. And the fact
let's do a positive on this storyline, because Eugene brought a van with all the stuff that they got for him to bring to him. And he was like, we want him to have it. So obviously Dot's been part of that.
Yeah.
And Tom talks about introducing him to an adoption agency. And he says, when Dot stops crying, we will.
Yeah. What made me dislike Marnie was just that she was having a really hard time, but she, not once did she put herself in Dot's shoes.
Yeah.
No,
it was like,
never.
Dot. I think she didn't think of Dot's feelings.
Dot sacrificed herself for little baby, I don't remember what the baby's name is.
Andrew.
The baby. Andrew.
Prince Andrew.
Andrew Thomas.
And even though it was painful for her and hard for her to find, you know, like, she still was like, no, the baby should have all these nice things. And the baby should have this, you know, blah, 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 blah. Again, I'm not saying Marnie's a bad mother, but I didn't see that in Marnie. You know what I mean? So anyways, I'll just.
You said this earlier, Jen, but for Dot to get a baby that she's longed for.
Yeah.
Have it taken away
like that.
Oh, horrible. Horrible.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I'm not at all. I think it's awful what happened to Dot, and I'm completely full of compassion for Dot. It's awful. There's not, you know, but I just, I've got compassion for Marnie. Well, more compassion than you two for Marnie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll say this. I think, I mean, and this is not expressly intended as a segue, but just to say, like, mothers who are so, or people or women who are so focused on becoming a parent and have parenthood within their grasp, and then to have it snatched away at the last moment, or what feels like the last moment, was clearly a theme in this week's episode, because not only did Dot have that, you know, kind of like taken from her, but also Sheila was in risk, at risk of it. And God help me, I can't remember the name who actually did lose her baby. That was her like bedmate Gloria. There in the hospital. Gloria. She actually did lose it as well. And like,
did you notice they kept, so it's like a duality of it. They kept going from one scene to Marnie's, to then one scene to the hospital with her, the one scene to Marnie. It was really going there. Stark contrast of someone who wants a baby so much and can't have one, but someone who has a baby but can't keep it. I just thought that was quite a
And the point I was even making was that, you know, Dot and Gloria were the same, because they both were so ready to be mothers, and then had that opportunity just stolen away from them. And
it
how,
was harrowing.
How tragic and heartbreaking is that? I mean, oh God, the scene at the I'm just going to jump ahead one tiny bit. The scene at the end with Sheila and Gloria, where Gloria's packing up her suitcase and she's like, one day, she's like, maybe this year, maybe next year, maybe the year after that. She's like, I think that two of us are going to meet at the market and we're both going to have prams and we're just going to talk about, you know, the vegetables and the weather and just how things are going. And I, when I tell you, I was absolutely gone. I mean,
I'm going to say something on that. No, I don't want to do a spoiler, but in a few seasons' time. We will talk about that. We will go back to this exact point. So, you know,
I need to, before we move on, I need to slag Tom off a bit more.
Oh, go on. Okay. Do it.
Because not only did Marnie have zero compassion, Tom had zero compassion for Dot. And I get it with Tom, because Tom was adopted and Barbara had to say to him, this isn't your story. And I think Tom, for the first time, really understood it from the point of somebody who was having to give up their child. But why didn't he appreciate the position that his adoptive mother was in?
So,
you mean the mother that actually raised him, you're saying?
Really, she was akin to Dot.
I feel like he's kind of had this epiphany, because the whole of his life he's only been seeing it from Dot's point of view.
Like, he then over.
Well, then he should be a bit more compassionate.
No, I know, but now he's got this newfound, oh, hang on, I know what the mother. So maybe I don't know why I'm being such a bleeding heart. Actually, I'm normally a bleeding heart, Anna. But yeah, I think
he really over-identified with Marnie in that moment. You know, it was like Marnie was a stand-in for his own mother.
His role is to provide pastoral care. You can't pick and choose who you provide it for.
I mean, you can't, but Tom does all the time. Sorry. So yeah. Oh God.
Talk about the Turners and Gloria?
Yeah, let's do it. Go on.
Sheila's in hospital from the follow-on from last week, because she bled last week when the inspector was there. So she's in hospital now on bed rest. And you know,
she's an elderly prima gravida.
And she's 36, which, like, don't even on that.
I was 36 when I had my daughter. I was 36. Jeez. I wasn't called elderly prima gravida though, but I think it's because I turned 36 like 2 weeks before I had her. Do you know what I mean?
Well, also I just think all of that's changed now.
No, Jen. Honestly, they're still called elderly prima gravida, and they're still. I'm sure 36 is the age that they are now.
Okay, well, that's fine. Maybe they just know people don't want to hear that, so they don't bother saying it in front of a patient. So,
what really annoyed me though, so they have this first scene where Dr. Turner's there with Sheila in the hospital, like, oh, how are you? How are the children? They're looking after each other. Angela's 2.5. How's she looking after anyone?
Literally,
like 14. So yeah, exactly.
Looking after.
But I don't know. I really haven't seen them that much. Anyway, they seem fine, but you know, I don't know. I guess I'll have to check in later. So
yeah,
like God bless Timothy.
Well, they talked about that woman who came to see them. To
Mrs. Penny.
Timothy make some comment about like what he's making for dinner or something? Maybe I made that up or I dreamed it or something like that. But he's like, oh, yeah, I've got the casserole in the oven. Like, it'll be ready at 6:30, Pop.
No, Mrs.
Like,
Penny had left it.
Oh, yeah, okay. People were leaving food on the doorstep.
Yeah, because they knew the kids would starve without an actual functioning parent in the household. Yeah.
Well, if a 2.5-year-old's looking after the other one as well, you've got real issues.
Do you know what annoyed me?
Go on.
As well. Everything in this episode, apparently. No. Yeah. It annoyed me that Sheila wouldn't use a bedpan.
Oh, yeah.
Like, now I get it. But for God's sake, she wouldn't tolerate that.
No, she wouldn't. She's the last nurse who'd tolerate that.
She'd be like, oh, also, no, dear, it'll be fine. Go in the bedpan.
Also,
like I said before, she's from where I sounded like she was from.
Janaria?
Genovia. Yeah, exactly.
No, Genaria, like generic, weird Genaria.
Indiscriminate European country that I'm making a voice out of. Yep.
I feel like I had another point, but I forgot what it was. I'm sure I'll start ranting.
I'm sure it's fantastic. Do you know what I hated? The doctor. That arrogance, the awfulness of the doctor being like, pregnancies click or they don't. We just have to wait and see. Well, it's all good you waiting and see if these click or they don't. I hated it.
The pregnancy click or they don't comment absolutely sent me to the moon. And I will tell you, when that poor woman, Gloria, had to be in the exam room, thank God Delia was there. But when she literally had to lay on the bed, completely exposed in front of like 10 men doctors and show everything because he wanted to like have like a teaching moment. Oh my God. I absolutely wanted to go in there and just like slap every single one of them for being disgusting.
We were talking about the fact that she'd need a cervical stitch. And he was like, I'm prepared to give it my consideration. I've written the effing audacity of him. I did write the
effing God. And the thing is, he didn't do it. And then what happens? You know what I mean? Just the unbelievable, like, presumption and audacity of that man. Like,
I'd have been like, just do it then and there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know what? Actually, I'll give you guys something here with, I don't know why I'm premised. Anyways, I'm going to say something. So here's the thing. So I live with my mom, obviously. And, you know, she has all of her experiences from like this time. Because she was still a little kid during the 60s, but like between her and all of her lady friends, you know, they grew up in this time where like this, you know, rampant, you know, patriarchy, sexism was just like everywhere. And she has said, and then she just told me a story not long ago about another friend of ours who's an older lady as well, and a comment about how something they'd had a male doctor for a long time, and then, you know, they had to switch and they got a lady doctor, and this friend of ours was like, and you know what? I'm never gonna have anybody but a female doctor ever again. And I was just like, amen. And that was the thing. Like, I just think there's a lot of stuff that, like, you know, I mean, I've made actively the choice that like I want to have female care providers for certain types of health issues. Have been lucky enough to be able to make that happen. But like, I mean, there is. I just that scene absolutely sent me to the moon and back. And like, just, I mean, the fact that he was just, I get it. It's a medical procedure, but like no sensitivity, no bedside manner, no understanding of what this woman has lost before. And like Delia was literally the only person in that room who cared about her as a human being.
Well, Jen, have you heard about the coil over here? There's been research done about the coil.
What's the coil for?
So the coil is like a contraception that gets put into women, basically. I don't want to talk too much in detail because I'll faint. But
I think we have something similar over here. It may not be called the same thing, but it's something similar. Yeah.
So anyway, women are offered this, and it's really painful to put it in. It's a really painful procedure.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
We have the same over here too.
But they are not offered any painkillers or anything like that. Yeah. And basically, there's been this big research about it, and it's just been a bit of a hoo-ha in the press. Have a look at it. But basically,
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah,
that men are offered stuff that's a lot less painful, and they're offered painkillers where women have having real issues with this, and there's no pain relief at all offered.
They've done
surveys about dentists and stuff, and about literally dentists offer painkillers to men like 90% more than women, because they're like, women can handle the pain.
Exactly.
I don't want to handle the pain. I don't want to handle the pain. Why are we handling pain?
Well, I mean, the thing is, like, the way we've even labeled natural childbirth, like a childbirth with no pain medication or support whatsoever, just like, you know, you know, and it's like, have you ever heard of a natural root canal? Have you ever heard of a natural appendectomy? Have you ever heard of a natural, you know, like, I'm trying to think of another procedure, but anyway, those are my two ones that I came up with. But like, there is so much sexism in medicine, and frankly, it's worse for, I mean, like, there's lots of different categories of it. There's like sexism against women. There's, you know, racial bias against different, you know, minority groups and things like that. I mean, there's so much in there. And this is definitely a time where nobody's aware of that. No one's thinking of it, even though people are living with it every single day. And it just absolutely sends me over the moon. And I know I've seen those studies in the US too about the IUD, both getting it put in and then getting it taken out, yeah, which is also yeah. not easy to do either. And women are, you know, it's like walking, it's like, oh, it's just a couple of little pinches. It's just some pressure, you know, that kind of thing. No big deal, you know, whatever. And then you go through all this horrible stuff. And meanwhile, you know, like men have a vasectomy and it's like, oh, it's like you had your spine replaced or something. Like, we're going to put you on bed rest for 4 weeks and like give you 400 milligrams of Percocet every day. And, you know, God forbid, like, here's your FMLA or whatever. And it's just
vasectomy.
Oh, and I'm saying that vasectomy isn't a serious thing. I'm not saying that at all. But again, where's the parity? Okay. Where's the sensitivity for women's pain and people's pain when it's not just, you know, the stereotypical person?
What annoyed me most about Gloria's storyline was that her miscarriage was completely preventable.
Yes.
Oh, well, he was so still sad. Considering if he was going to give her a cervical stitch or not when it happened.
Well, the fact that Delia literally pointed out the answer right in front of him, and then he's like, oh, you know what? I don't know. I guess I'm just going to like wait and see. And then he's going to let her go through that horrible traumatic event all over again.
No. I'll tell you what else, really. The conversation that Sheila and Gloria had about what a baby kicking feels like. Aww. And it was just a really touching, and she was just explaining what it beautiful. Feels like because, yeah, Sheila had never felt it before. And she was saying it feels, I can't remember what she said it felt like.
Little goldfish flapping its fins.
Little goldfish, yeah. They were like, oh, it feels like
butterflies. Oh, God.
Do you know what broke my heart?
Like rage to like tears here today. I'm so on a... Oh,
also, thanks. Gloria, I mean, would it even be termed a miscarriage? Because she was 6 months pregnant, so...
Like, oh, it's like more than that, you think?
I don't know.
Well, yeah, probably in those days, miscarriage, I don't know. I
mean, but she didn't even know, like, if the baby would have fingers and toes.
No, like, no, they wouldn't let her see the baby either. They were like, no.
6 months is a pretty significant loss. I mean, like, that's, I don't know how, what the baby looks like at 6 months, but I mean, that's a significant loss.
Well, that baby would be, I mean, that baby wasn't born, it was stillborn, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, she had to go through something to get it.
But out. That baby would have been viable.
Well, nowadays. If it had been able to make it and everything. But
well, they were seen. You've mentioned this before, but they had that scene, that lovely conversation where she was like, you know, hopefully we're there in the future. And then she's packing up a bag and then Dr. Turner comes in for them to listen to the heartbeat. And then they just close the curtain on it. And poor Gloria's just stood out there. And I was like, oh.
I know.
And
I was
I
so
cry
happy.
Like a baby when they heard the heartbeat, to be fair.
I know. I was so happy for Sheila and Dr. Turner. But at the same time, my heart was breaking for Gloria, and it was a real like duality of emotion in that. Oh man,
I
love the nurse that was like, I've arranged for a special doctor to come in, like, he's very busy. And then Dr. Turner like just looks so proud as punch, and like he's so excited, and it was just real whole range of emotions.
Also, can I just say about Timothy, like, bless him, when Dr. Turner got called to Marnie's birth and then knowing that Sheila wasn't going to have any visitors, he arranged for Mrs. Penny to come in and babysit Angela.
I know. It was so
and
lovely.
And to visit Sheila.
Oh, Tim is
I also
so
liked
good.
It when Dr. Turner got some pork scratchings and some pale ales for them to have like a beer, because that's where men talk at the pub. I love that.
I thought Dr. Turner was actually a bit tipsy.
Yeah.
I mean, Dr. Turner is a very kind of like, he's a really good doctor, but he also has a very like, I don't know. Well, anyways, like, he's a very devil may care kind of guy about a lot of stuff too, which is, I think, really
funny.
Yeah,
because when Sheila was in the hospital as well, given that he's a doctor, he found it very awkward talking to her about what was going on.
Mm-hmm. I think they did that on purpose though, to kind of be like, you can act around this stuff all day, you can deal with it all day every day, but when it's your family, then that's when it actually really hits home.
It was like when she'd had another bleed, he was like, I hear you've had a setback.
But you know, the thing is, like, he wasn't like that with Tim being sick, but he kind of was the same way. Like, he, like, for as much as he's a doctor, like, he like isn't a doctor anymore when someone in his family is at risk, you know what I mean?
Like, just that's... show how like impotent he felt, how he couldn't deal with it. Right. He couldn't help.
Right. Well, you can really like compartmentalize when it's, you know, feels like somebody separate from you, but then when it's like your person, then you're like, oh no, oh God, and you know, the whole thing.
Shall we talk about the new midwife?
Oh, Valerie Dyer. Oh my
Well,
goodness.
before we talk about that, it was the fact that they were struggling getting a new midwife. And they were talking.
Yeah, I wonder what Jen's deleted scenes were. Did you see them discussing the potential candidates, Jen?
Yes, I did. And I saw them with like the rotate, you know, like all the ladies, like Sister Monica Joan opening the door over and over again to all the different women.
There did was you see scene. About the American?
No, I think I missed that one. Although I might have zoned out for that one. But it was
I'm very sorry you did, because it was amazing.
So somebody applied. Where was she from, Alex? Can you remember?
Vermilion or something.
Vermilion.
Yeah.
Was it in Utah?
South Dakota.
South Dakota. Okay. Yeah. Yep.
So she was from Vermilion, and Sister Julianne was like, I thought an American would be a breath of fresh air. And Nurse Crane's face was so like, no chance. So then Sister Julianne says, so no Americans then. And I really wanted to discuss this on the podcast, because I also wanted to say that when I actually watched this and I had this idea, I was watching kind of this area as well, because I used to watch it all the time. And,
these series.
Yeah. And uh-huh. This scene, I thought at the time, this would be gold on a podcast with Jen.
Americans and no men.
Yeah.
That's my rule in life.
I'm very used to my culture being my nationality being slagged off by you both and all of our British girlfriends. I quickly learned we were considered second class citizens.
But yeah, I was loving the interviews. And then there was Nurse Crane's comment about young working class women all over when the war's on, but then they don't want to know them after. And her comment about that got Sister Julianne's mind clicking, thinking,
she literally had a light bulb go off. Yeah. Like, I literally saw the little light bulb above her head just go. Like, just she was fully like, wait a minute. Yeah.
Then she went to the Hand and Shears, had a pint, then went to the Black Sail.
And then she had some like lemonade drink out of a dusty glass that you know, Val served her. She was like, oh, these are the ladies' glasses. And she's like, I had to dust this one out, don't worry. And I was like, oh, okay, I don't know what ladies' glasses means, but whatever.
What was the drink?
That Sister Julianne got. It was like, what?
I thought it was like a barley water.
Oh.
I just thought 7-Up, forgetting it was 1962. So
you girls love barley-based, like, I don't. Foods.
I don't.
But Dr. Turner brought Sheila barley sugars, and then you said barley. I'm like, what? I guess there was a real, like, run on barley back then.
Well,
this
it was
time,
1962. Right? Like, we don't just have barley water now. Did you offer your tea bags barley and barley water? No, the shell.
But I have to say, I would have hated to be interviewed by Nurse Crane.
Yeah. Oh, she would be very intimidating.
Well, you should especially hate being interviewed by Nurse Crane, Jen, you're American.
Yeah, you were just at no chance.
To be honest with you, I would have gotten booted right out of that job, because I mean the lavatories, the no hand washing, like, you know, I'm not up here for, like, you know, the communal bathrooms and the no hand washing and the bugs on the walls and like all the rest of it, like, you know, nappies in the sink where you wash your dishes, like, I would not. And bicycling 800 miles a day and like doing, you know, three times a day visit, like, no. I don't know how
fair the interview process was with Sister Julianne going to Val being like, just send a letter and you've got the job.
And honest, also, when she got the letter back, it was like she was nerd. Like, she was like, have I got this? She's basically been promised it.
Well, but also,
no,
like,
I think that's to show how much it means to them. Because if you remember when they first met, she was saying how she used to love the Nanartans, and her and her sister used to think they took the babies in the brown cases. Like, so it's a big deal to her family and everything.
But the thing is, and this is a question we haven't asked in a long, long time, but like, and I mean, I love Val. Val's a great nurse. But the fact of the matter is, like, what actual qualifications does Val have? Like, I mean, she was definitely an army nurse, and that's for sure. And she like had that training. But then when the war was over, she came back and she literally has just been working in the pub. Like, does she need to take a test? Does she need to like get a license? Like, what?
No,
what
in. Is? She's in, Jen. She's in.
But I know.
Yeah,
she's
because
in,
actually,
but
there wouldn't have been much midwifery in the army, would there?
No, and like, I mean, and she did get hired as a district nurse, you know, so that's fair. But like,
they must have said she had midwife training beforehand. They must have said it.
I'm sure they did. I'm sure. And obviously she's qualified and like all that kind of stuff like that. And who's going
to
get
I was too distracted by loving the slagging off Americans comment because I thought, can't wait to bring this up to Jen.
Well, and by the way, that's another mark against us because the last American we saw was that horrible fiance of the son.
Oh, yeah.
That was bad to his mom, remember? And so like now we have had two bad Americans.
You know what? Maybe when we met Heidi Thomas, I could have been like, what have you got against Americans?
You're cutting out a whole group of audience members here that really love this show. Like, come on, give us a good American role model, for God's sakes.
Do you know what I was loving? Nurse Crane's comment about small boys who she finds exasperating and violent.
Oh. So true. So in context, basically, they were saying about this. So
This is the scene where Fred is wearing the overalls, by the way. I feel like
yeah. Yeah.
So there's a recreation area opening, but the mayor can't open it, but they're still going to make this good of it. Violet and Fred are going to do stuff. Violet looks after the brownies and there's no one looking after the cubs. It's gone to hell in a handcart since so basically they were like, Barbara was like, I've not got the time, and Fred was like, I've not got the time. So they were like saying to Nurse Crane, you should do it, and she was like, oh no, I find young boys exasperated and violent. I thought same. Then Barbara and Fred were like, well, they're just going to become exasperating and violent men if you don't get
Get your hands on them and change them now. Yeah, exactly.
and she went to get a whistle. And I love the fact that she tried to get a discount for the whistle. How expensive is this whistle? Also, well, that brownie outfit. Bex, was your brownie outfit like that?
I was too scared to join the brownies.
You are? Why? Did they have knives near you? Like,
no, I was too shy. Like, I just didn't. I did have a hand-me-down brownie outfit, but I was too scared to actually attend.
Well, I made you.
Yeah, I just feel like Phyllis's like a Kayla outfit was like literally the same pattern they used for the nurses' uniforms, and they just made it in green. You know what I mean? It looked like the exact same cut, the exact same shape. It was just like in that green color.
Because I was in brownies, and we had that. Basically, it was 20 years later, but it was still pretty much the exact same brownies outfit, except we had a brown bubble hat with like patches on it. But I remember my brownie.
But where were the brownies? I only saw boys in this.
You see, the brownies were around the maypole with Violet.
Oh, yes, I saw that. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
I wore that exact same brownie outfit, but I was really tall and I was given someone who was really short. The outfit, so I used to have to wear cycling shorts under mine. But
here's a story, and I won't say who this is, although if she listened to the pod she would know. But I had a friend one time. Now, we were both in our like late 20s, I want to say, and she was very much, we were both single at the time. She was very, very single at the time and hoping not to be. And it was coming up on Halloween, and she decided that she wanted to like really make a splash with her costume. And, all girls do this. You know, you want to kind of use Halloween as a chance to kind of like, you know, maybe like step out of character a little bit. Not all girls, but you know what I'm saying? Like there is a tradition of girls wearing, you know, kind of revealing costumes. And I'm not sure, I can't remember now how she got her hands on it, but there was a Girl Scout outfit from somebody who had been in Girl Scouts when they were a kid, but not like a little child, like older. But my friend is quite a slight woman, and she was able to squeeze herself into this dress. And when I tell you, it was as short and as tight as you could go. And she was dressed as a Girl Scout, but it was very much like Girl Scout as a, you know, like it was kind of like, you know, like how you dress as a French maid, kind of. It was like, it was meant to be very suggestive and everything. And I mean, she did look very, you know, she hit the mark, you know what I'm saying? But anyways, that really stood out to me because I was like, oh my God. I mean,
I think you're going to attract the wrong kind of.
I think she was kind of hoping for perhaps just a little bit of wrong. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it was a time in life. You know what I mean? Like there are seasons for everything.
No, I'd rather go, if I'm gonna have to do fancy dress, I'd rather go down the comedy route.
Oh, whenever I think about dressing up for Halloween, I either want to go as like an old man or an old woman. Like I want to wear something comfortable that where I don't have to look cute at all. Like
fancy dress. I hate it. It's never fun.
I hate it. Yeah, well, you have to buy clothes that you're never going to wear again. And that's always something that I don't want to do. And I like Halloween, but it just feels like it's just a lot of work also. So
at last Halloween, I it rained really, really badly. And I went trick-or-treating, and we had a bit of a Halloween party at our house.
And I wore like bright green face and did all this, thinking other adults would do it. No one else did. And then when we went trick or treating and got absolutely peed on, like I was wet to my knickers with rain.
Oh.
And my daughter was like, she was 5 at this point, but she was still like, come on, let's go, loving it. I'm like, I got back and I looked like I'd just been one of the melted witches from the, you know, where.
We used to do bar crawls in fancy dress when I first joined my job. And we once did a theme. We were dressed up. I was dressed as a bumblebee. My friend was dressed as a ladybird. And we wore balaclavas that you got for us, Alex.
Yes.
And we had to get a taxi. And the taxi driver was like, I feel like a getaway driver. So we basically got in wearing balaclavas.
Do you remember that? That night we met all those Hulk Hogans.
Yes, I do.
There was a stag do, and we were out with our other friend from uni, and we were out visiting Bex, and there was a load. There was like 20 Hulk Hogans, and then the actual groom was the Ultimate Warrior, and he was so drunk he kept doing the Ultimate Warrior's pose and then just running around like outside. That was ace.
Oh, God.
Anyway, talking to Fred and Violet. So they had a big race, basically, that the old pram of Marnie's was involved in. But it's all right, because she got a brand new one anyway from Eugene.
Yeah, exactly. No, she ran the scam on that poor family, and then she got all new stuff out of it. Yeah.
The end scene when, like, everybody's happy down the new rec ground. Marnie's loving life because the baby's in a really posh pram. Dot's just sat around lino, sobbing.
A new mattress. She's had a rent paid. She's living the life for Riley.
Yeah, really, really. It worked out the best.
Although Fred's costume, next level good. Dressed as a Roman. Also, Sister Mark is doing being in the race. Yeah, he was dressed as a Roman. It was next level good. You need to go watch the end of it.
I'm going
to
go back.
Also, Sister Monica Joan being part of the race. She's like 90. Pushing her along. And also the Trixie, poor Barbara, was really self-conscious at the front of the aerobics. And then she was like, oh, yeah, we're going to do it for the opening of the rec ground. What, in our leotards?
Barbara's like, my wobbly bit.
Yeah.
Trixie's lost all her fitness. That's not from the fact that she's not been to keep fit. She's not been cycling around Poplar.
Yeah, that's true.
Definitely think that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. She'll be more sedentary. She's so hot. She'd be conserving energy over there as well. One more scene I want to talk about is actually about Trixie. Trixie and Sister Julienne talking about Sister Mary Cynthia.
Oh yeah.
Oh yes. This is so important. I totally forgot about this. Yes. We're heading towards this bigger plot line. But these are the breadcrumb phase, and it's very concerning.
And I don't think Sister Julienne necessarily knows the full truth. Do you think Sister Julienne is just repeating what she's been told?
Yeah, 100%.
She definitely is just trusting what's been told to her.
He wouldn't let it lie if she knew it was anything bad.
And not to be a spoiler, but like later on, something will happen, and I feel very confident that Sister Julienne is going to say, I can't believe I didn't do more for you. Like, if I had known this was going on, I would have like searched. Sister Julienne is going to have a real kind of like crisis of conscience later on. I feel very confident about that. I think that's right. Yeah. But yeah, I'm worried about Cynthia too. Like,
Sister Mary, anyways. I keep getting told off when I call her Cynthia by Bex. So,
well,
I just think it's disrespectful.
But notice she didn't say anything to Jen then.
Well, God, because she knows I'm raging like an absolute psychopath right now this episode. You don't know where I'm going to go.
I'm literally cowering because I'm making sure I'm saying it right.
I know, but I've been flying off the handle this whole time. So
I don't want us to get corrected by people like they don't even know that Cynthia's Sister Mary Cynthia.
I know.
Oh, see, you mean you're saying they're fine with Jen, not knowing.
Well, I just don't know anything.
Well, she's American.
That's great. That's really great. Oh, just what I needed. Thanks, girls.
Should we do zeros and heroes?
Yeah, let's do it. Who's going first?
Oh, not me. I have no idea. Sorry.
My zero. We all know who it is. It's Marnie.
Yeah, I'm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Got nothing positive to say about Marnie.
Mm-hmm.
I have more. I did go off on her about her financial situation. I do have more sympathy for that because she's just dug herself into a hole. But her complete lack of compassion and empathy, putting herself in Dot's shoes, just snatching Kevin's birthday present off him. Yeah. It's just she'd gone too far.
Yeah.
Too far.
My hero, all I knew was my zero. I don't actually have a hero prepared. It's not going to be Tom. It's not going to be Sister Winifred.
The bouncer.
Not really. Sheila.
At the risk of giving away one that I could use, what about Eugene?
Well, why are you giving her ideas?
No, I'm not going to give it to Eugene because he is forced. He's probably shooting blanks.
Well, I don't think that's the case for making him a zero.
No, but what I mean is he's forced Dot into a situation where he will only have his own flesh and blood in the house. He won't consider adoption. So, yeah, he does come good in the end, but no. My hero is going to be Valerie Dyer.
Oh, there we go.
Because she is into caring, not just curing.
Oh, nice. I like that. Did you just think of that? That was good.
No, I wrote that down because she said it. The army was more curing than caring.
Oh, she did, yeah. I did actually hear that from her and then just let you take credit for it in my head.
Yeah.
I'll go next. My hero is... No, actually, I'll do my zero first. My zero is Marnie's husband. None of this would have happened without him leaving and just abandoning her and his two children already.
Also, we should always be blaming men more than we are. So let's just do that too.
Yeah, the other hero, zero could have been the doctor who was just awful. My hero is going to be Eugene. And you're right about the fact that you said about not having anything that wasn't his flesh and blood, but he learned from that and he's not going to do that anymore. And the fact that he wanted the child to have everything and that he was there obviously supporting Dot still, and then he was going to go and look into adoption and, you know, sort it. I just think that was really good that he did actually have a change of heart there, and the situation did make him evolve. And I just like the fact that he did still, they could have been spiteful and been like, I can't believe you've done this, and try and get everything back. But no, he was very magnanimous with it. He gave her the stuff and that was it. Like, I just thought that was very...
Mm-hmm. Well, see, they're going to get a baby easy, aren't they?
I feel that they're going to adopt a baby and have a nice, happy life with that.
Yeah, I really, really hope so. But I thought that he didn't have to do that, and he did. And I thought that was very kind.
Right, exactly. They could have saved it been treated badly. They're ready to have a baby and they decided to be generous. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, my zero is gonna be, we've already touched on this a little bit, but it's more the overall situation, but that horrible doctor who treats Gloria so badly. Yeah. I just think he was an absolute, to borrow a British phrase, knobhead, and I just absolutely was so mortified on her behalf, having to have all of her bits out, like, in front of everybody, like, with no compassion and understanding, and then to be, like, so disrespected, just, you know, like, as a matter of course. And then, like, what she went through absolutely just broke my heart. And when she was, like, packing up her bag and putting, like, her little slippers in her suitcase and everything, it just absolutely killed me. And, like, for as happy as I am for Dr. Turner and Sheila, and, you know, we know what's coming for them and stuff like that, I just still... like, just really broke my heart in the moment. And I just felt that horrible, disgusting doctor was doing a disservice to his profession and humanity. And then my hero is going to be Phyllis, because I will tell you what, like, taking on the job of raising sweet, kind, rule-following, respectful men is no easy task. And I know she's not their mother, but she's spending a lot of time with those boys. And it's going to be a lot of energy and effort on her part to, you know, whip them into shape. And I just think she's a hero and I love her. And I think that, you know, the whistle was hilarious. And I just think she's so great. And along with my hero for Phyllis, I just have to do an honorable mention for Fred and his overalls, because I just love him again. And I just am not going to get over it. And I don't want to. And even though I've been so all over the place this episode, yeah, those are my heros and zeros.
I actually want to not amend. I just want to add an extra hero. I actually changed my hero at last minute without remembering, because I just totally forgot who I was going to choose. I had it written down and then I deleted it by accident. My actual hero, and yeah, Eugene, yeah, he's great, but he's not my actual hero. My actual hero is Gloria.
Oh.
She just keeps going through it, but she still comes back and she still tries and she still has that hope. And
yeah,
I just think what she's been through is absolutely horrendous. Mm-hmm. And she is my hero for just not losing hope and not losing... keeping on, like, poor girl, it's awful. So she's my hero.
Her strength of character is legendary, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, that awful doctor, I think he was called Mr. Kenley.
Yeah, Dr. Kenley, I think, was right. Yeah, yeah.
He just, the other thing that I didn't say earlier was he just completely underestimated Sheila and Delia.
Yeah.
Because they know what they're talking about.
She'd be small, but she'd be mighty, was what he said when she actually knew something.
Yeah. And he was like completely taken aback when they both knew what they were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was like, oh, women actually have, like, you know, intelligence and experience and competency in an area of, you know, like a magnitude of this. Like, oh, I'm shocked. And it was just so, oh, he was such a disgusting.
Ugh, I just put the audacity.
Ugh. Have you guys ever seen that thing where it's like, where do men find the audacity? Where, like, where do men get the audacity? And it's like a picture of, like, you know, like an anatomical drawing of a man, but instead of the appendix, it's like the audacity.
Have you seen the why are men? Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Right, so there's this meme online, why are men? Yeah. And it's the men are headache or why are men as well. There's two of them. But basically this one woman was like doing an interview thing. And this lady, English wasn't her first language. She was just like, men are headache, why are men? And it's like now this meme. Why are men?
Oh, God. I don't know why I thought about this earlier, but I've just been, like, so hormonal and everything. And I thought about, there was this comedian, American comedian, who did this hilarious bit where she was, like, singing a song. She had, like, a little keyboard and everything. She's like, when NASA scientists asked, like, a female astronaut, like, how many tampons? She did it way better. Like, anyone who's listening, just Google this and, like, you will get her rendition. It's so funny. But she's like, when NASA scientists asked how many tampons they should send up into space, like, for, you know, the lady astronauts that were going, you know, they said, I'm butchering this joke, but it's like, how about 100? Will that be enough? Yeah, that you would use 100 tampons, period. I just, oh, it's like, it again, Google it, because I've literally butchered it. But when I tell you that, like, I haven't, because I've done it so badly and I haven't given the context.
Thing is,
at all,
though, you say that, Jen, but when I go away literally for a weekend, I pack like 25 pairs of knickers, like I'm gonna soil myself every like, half hour.
Like, literally, for however many days you're away, you should always pack 3X or 4X underwear per day, because, like, God knows what will happen. But, like, I'm just saying, like, if you literally are going up into space for 1 week and then you're coming back, even if you are on your period every single day, you are not going to go through 100 tampons. I don't know. I mean, you would have to be changing them hourly, practically, to get that to, like, volume level.
My brain just went to a really weird place that I was thinking about being in space and how would I get changed. And, you know, when you've, like, putting your bra up, your boobs would be going hitting your face.
I don't know how you'd even change a tampon in space, and I never want to know. I mean, that's the last place I'd ever want to go, and I believe me, I'm not even going to get the chance to go. No one will ask me, but like, I just, oh my God. But the idea that men are just so clueless about women, that they're like, oh, how many tampons do you use in a period? 100? 100. How about that? And it's just like,
I've seen someone online be like, which one do you want, the lemon or the like the blueberry flavor or whatever, like one's like green and one's like purple.
No, we could go on and on, but anyways, I know all of our listeners will know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. Next week we are on series 6, episode 5. We would love you to watch along and listen along with us. But yeah, follow us on Instagram, Threads, Twitter, Facebook. We've got a YouTube channel that you can subscribe to.
Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram, you can follow us and subscribe and give us a lovely message on and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts.
Wherever you find your podcast.
Yeah, we've got them everywhere. So yeah, give us a follow, give us a like, give us a comment, give us some questions if you need questions, that'd be amazing. Also, at the end of this series, we will be doing a listener special. So if you've got anything you want us to ask for that or get us to do, we are going to be trying, as much as Bex doesn't want to, we are going to be trying peanut butter and jelly. And my daughter is desperate to come on for that bit. So we're going to have her on doing it as well.
Has she eaten a peanut butter and jelly yet?
Never.
And she's going to try one for the first time on that episode?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Do you think it would be the same if I did it on toast instead of bread?
No, honey, you have to have it. You have to have two pieces of bread with peanut butter and jelly touching each other and eating them as a sandwich.
But I can't have peanut butter and I can't have a toasted sandwich.
I mean, if you want to very lightly toast the bread, you can do that, but you got to make it into a sandwich. You can't just put peanut butter on the bottom and then jelly on top and then just eat it like a piece of toast.
It's just the texture of bread and peanut butter. It seems very...
But that's what I think you need. That's why I think you need to try it properly, because you're not trying it properly.
I'm telling you, you need to get like really, like you can't get like wacky peanut butter. Like you need to get like proper, like smooth, silky peanut butter. And then like,
yeah, this is what I was going to ask. Does it need to be, have a crunch or not?
I mean, I don't generally go for crunchy peanut butter myself, but if that's the kind of peanut butter you like, that's okay. But I'm just saying, don't
get
any of that natural peanut butter or peanut butter that has like oil on the top or peanut butter that's like,
well, Jen, we'll do all this. We'll discuss all this. But the other thing I'm going to do as well, me and my daughter are going to do a Fluffer Nutter as well.
Oh, yes, that's right. I have to do Fluffer Nutter. Okay, I'm going to get Fluffer Nutter stuff. Yes.
But again, we've got weeks yet, but.
Oh, Fluffer Nutter.
Yeah. Anyway, on that note, you Fluffer Nutters.
Especially Fluffer Nutter this week, I'll tell you that much. Oh, Lordy Massies.
Yes, see you all on Series 6, Episode 5, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Ciao. Bye.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.